Thank you.
Can I ask, are you in a lot of pain?
Yes.
Are you?
Yes.
Right. Okay. You can have a freebie later. Come and see me, I'll turn your pain off.
Oh, can you do that? Wow.
Okay. Okay, so I'll make a start. I'm Stephen Blake. I'm a therapist. You'll never see what I actually do down here because I don't advertise what I do. I advertise what I can do for you rather than the modality of it. Come on in. Because it's all about what is it that you've got a problem with and can it be fixed? And most people don't realise the things they have can be fixed. So I work mainly with people with anxiety. And with anxiety, I've never ever yet, and I've helped hundreds of people over the last 5 years, I've never ever yet had anybody I can't make a major change in one session. Never. It's never happened. Right. Anxiety is different to depression. Depression, I seem to make the change in the session and then it comes back a bit. And then it comes back a bit and then it comes back a bit. So I end up with lots of sessions with people with depression. But I think there's a big difference between being depressed and having the state called depression, where you have to have tablets all your life and you've got a chemical imbalance and all that. Depression is not caused by a chemical imbalance. Depression is, the chemical imbalance is the result of you having depression, right? It's not the cause. It is the effect of it, though, and this is why people's brains are different when they do scans and things. When they do scans, they see that people's brains that are depressed have depleted areas and brighter areas where all the problems are. Okay, so I'm going to explain my concept today, and this is, I think today's, I don't prepare well for anything, because I just run, okay? So I think it's called Don't Feed the Monster, isn't it, today?
Mm.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to explain briefly my how it works and the basis of everything I do. Your mind has two separate ways it works, consciously and unconsciously. And I call it, aware and unaware. So there's all the things that you know about that's going on and the voice in your head and everything else. And I'm covering the voice in your head tomorrow if anybody wants to come and listen to that. And so you have this awareness of things, but then lots of things are going on in the background that you're not aware of. Even your posture as you sat there. You're not having to think, oh, I'll sit like this or I'll move now or whatever. You don't even go, I'm uncomfortable, I'll move. Your body moves because it's uncomfortable, right? So there's so many things, and your heart and your lungs and everything else is working. Your pH balance of your stomach. There's 100 million things going on at any one time in you. And this is all run by your brain. And when people start talking about mind and body as though they're two different things, they are not. There's no separation between mind and body. And I can prove that to you in an instant. Because when we think good, happy thoughts, our body shape changes. Oh yeah, come on in. When we think good, happy thoughts, our body makes the shape of good and happy. Because we have muscular memory for what to do. And we're born with that because everybody, everywhere in the world, does the same things. Even if you were blind from birth, if you were joyous, you just won the lotto, you'd do that. It would be, yeah, right, bring it on, yeah. And if we're depressed, we start to close in on, if we get anxious or something, we start to close in on ourselves. And the more anxious we get, the more we close in on ourselves. And then depression is like, you keep out as well. Okay, and the body knows that. Now, we don't see people going down the road like this and go, oh, he's depressed. But the inside of the body is doing all that. It's getting all this tension as though it wants to do that. And if you're permanently in a state of anxiety or depression, you're holding your body in a certain shape all the time. And so when somebody comes to see me with a problem, I'll say, okay, I need to see, I've seen you now how you are today, and you're probably a little bit anxious about coming to see me, but I want you to show me what it's like when you have what it is you've come to get rid of. And I'll say, well, what happened? And how recent was that? Come on in, sit in the middle. Sit in the middle so I don't have to move my eyes a lot. And I'll say, right, just go back to that last time it was quite bad for you. And they'll go, oh, and then they go, oh. And I go, just a minute, I'm going to move your arm. Right? And I go up and I move their arm. I say, hold on to that bad thought. And I move their arm, and as I'm moving it, they change. And I go, no, hold on to that bad thought. And they go, I can't because you've moved my arm. And I go, doesn't that tell you something then? So there's no such thing as a depressed person while they're doing exercise. You cannot be depressed and exercise. Right? Because if you move your body, you don't lock into the depressed state. Right? Because the brain goes, oh, we're feeling depressed. But the body goes, oh, we're not, because we're doing exercise. So it can't take you there. But the thing is, we have these safety valves in, and depression is a safety aspect by your unconscious mind that takes you there. And it thinks it's a lovely place for you to go. Right? It doesn't know. Come on in. It doesn't know. It's a horrible place. Right? The most horrible of places. But it thinks it's a safety place, so it takes you there. And so if somebody's depressed and you say, oh, just get out and walk the dog, they'll snap at you like the dog. It'll be, I don't want to exercise. And it's almost like they don't want to get out of the depression. But that's because at the unconscious level, they're in a safe place for a while. Right? Even though it's horrible, they're in a safe place. So the brain just won't let them out of it. So fighting this with your conscious mind is a waste of time. Your conscious mind holds 8 bits of data at any one time. So if I told you my phone number now, 01526, I want you to remember this, 832563. Right, remember that? Okay, just hold on to that and I'll carry on talking and you won't hear a bloody thing. Because I've just filled your conscious mind up. So all of you that let go of that are now listening to me. Okay, but nobody has also got my phone number. Right? You can't do the two things at the same time. That's how little our conscious mind is worth. Right? The only purpose of having a conscious mind is free will. We get to choose. We got up this morning and we went, yeah, we'll go to that mind, body, spirit thing. Right? And you chose to come. And if you felt poorly, you'd probably not choose to come. Right? So there's lots of different reasons. And I've quite often had people come to see me who said, I wasn't going to come today, and then I sort of just felt the need to come. And I'm pleased to come because I saw your talk. So there's this sort of, there's something going on, but we're getting lots of messages and things that we don't understand what's happening, but we're driven to do things and we feel inclined to do things. And whether it's just something calculated in the back of the brain or what, who knows? But there's a lot more to it than that. But I don't make it more complicated than that. To me, there is just you with your conscious mind and you with your unconscious mind. And what that taps into, I don't care. So we've all got different beliefs about what it taps into, but it doesn't matter. You know, if you've got a best friend who gets you great tickets for all the concerts, you don't really need to know how they do it. So, and your unconscious is the same. But your unconscious gets you whatever you think about. And it doesn't understand negatives. It can't turn something around the other way. So if you think, oh God, I hope I don't have a headache tomorrow. Oh, really, I hope I don't have a headache tomorrow. What are you thinking about? A headache. What do you get tomorrow? A headache. Our language is incredible, and we exaggerate things. Trudy, the love of my life, the other day said, my heel is killing me. And I went, oh my God, I'll ring for an ambulance. And she went, what are you doing? And I went, I'm going to ring for an ambulance. Your heel's killing you. And she went, well, it's not killing me. I went, well, but you said that. And if you think about that, if your heel's killing you, and then you walk and it's quite comfortable, the brain goes, I thought it was killing you. And then it comes back. And then you, next step you make, you go, oh, yeah, it's killing me again. You've just brought it on. And it's been difficult in the past to actually explain how the brain doesn't understand negatives. Because we, at a conscious level, understand negatives. We can say, I don't want to be poor, and we understand that that's, I don't want to be poor, I want to be rich, or, but we're not giving it the alternative. We're just doing, I don't want to be, or I hope this doesn't happen. But the moment we do that, we're actually setting up the wrong thing. So about 3 weeks ago, I invented a joke. And I was going to do it on video, but I ended up just writing it down. But this is how it goes, okay? So this is the future. And what we have is a car. And you get in the car, and it takes you wherever you ask it to go. You don't have to do anything. Right? You just get out the other end. So the car says, you get in the car, and the car says, hello, I'm an automated car. Please state your destination, and when you're happy with that, please press the yellow button, and I will take you there. And this guy gets in, and he goes, oh, I don't know where I want to go, really. I know I don't want to go to London, though. London, you have selected London. No, not London. London, you have selected London. No, I really don't want to go to London. I live in London. London, you have selected London. You're making me cross now. Is that Brent Cross, Charing Cross, King's Cross, London? Right, so that's how the car works. And this is how your brain works now, this very moment. So the unconscious mind says to the person, hello, I thought I'd introduce myself. I'm the unconscious mind. I take you to anywhere you want to be. I can give you any feeling or anything that you want. Just state it and I will take you there immediately. Oh, never had this choice before. Well, I don't want to be anxious. Anxious, you have selected anxious. No, you're not getting this. I don't want to be anxious. Anxious, you have selected anxious. No, I really don't want to be anxious. Anxious, you have selected anxious. You're really making me cross now. Cross, you have selected cross. Are you bloody stupid? Stupid, you have selected stupid. You're really doing my head in. Head in, you have selected doing your head in. Oh, I get it. I'm supposed to say something positive and then you'll get me something. Okay. Right, I would like to meet the most beautiful person on the planet. I would like everybody who sees me to fall in love with me. And I would like $5 billion in my bank account. Your orders have been accepted. Just count down from 10 to 1 and you'll find the changes have been made. Oh, brilliant. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Picks up a mirror. Nothing's changed. Are you taking the piss? You started it. That explains how your mind works and the secret all in one go. How good does that get, eh? So this is what we do all the time, though. We think about the thing we don't want to happen. And we just turn it into this monster. You know, it's like, you know the cartoons where they have a skirting board? There's always a nice little hot arch there, isn't there? Black space. And usually two little eyes peeping out of it. And so what we do is we just notice it one day and we go, oh, I haven't noticed that before. Oh, there's two eyes. I wonder what it is, right? And they're very little eyes, near the floor. And we go, oh, but it's a monster laying down and it's a really big spider and it's this big. And then we start blowing this thing into, oh, I'm not going near that wall now. And then we get terrified of it. And then somebody else goes near the wall and we go, no, don't get near the wall, it's going to run us through it. And we turn this thing in bigger and bigger and bigger. Guys do it with fish. Other people do it with silly little things. And we turn anything into this terrible thing. But we do it based on how we feel about ourselves. It's never anything to do with the two eyes staring out the skirting board at you. Right? So whatever anybody comes to me and tells me is usually rubbish. Because it's not that at all. Even if they have a phobia and they come along and say, for instance, I'm scared of mice and rats. This woman came along. In fact, I'll tell you how she told me. She said, I said, what's the problem? And she said, I'm scared of And I went, pardon? She went, rats. And I couldn't get her to say it. Right? And I went, oh, right, I get it. So I took her back in time to this description of... And she told me a story. And it was a story where her and her mother went into the kitchen and saw a mouse on the table, and her mother screamed and sort of knocked her back, and she screamed and didn't know quite what she was screaming at and all that. And I treated her on that basis, and we got rid of that. And a few weeks later, she said... Stephen, you said, you know, you guarantee you were, and that fear of rats has come back. And I went, oh, has it? And she went, yes. I said, well, come and see me. Knowing full well, she's lost her fear of rats because she couldn't bloody say it before. So she comes to see me, and I said, well, I can still see that you've got a fear there. I said, but tell me that story again. And she said, right, what happened was, I went down to the kitchen on my own, and as I approached the kitchen, the door was open, and something ran past very quickly, and I didn't know what it was, and it scared the hell out of me. So I fetched my mother, and then we saw a mouse on the table. I said, ah, this is entirely different. You're not frightened of mice. And I went over to her, and I said, you're frightened of fast-moving things that go past your eyes. And I went like that, and she jumped out of the chair. And I said, that's the problem, and then we dealt with that. But it's never about what it seems to be. And I want you to think now of your friend, the friend that sucks the goodness out of the room, is a drama queen. Right? So everybody nod if you've got a friend who's a drama queen. Right? And if you're not nodding, I've got bad news for you. It's you. We've got somebody admitting it. And a drama queen will tell you something, and you sit there for 2 hours and you listen to this story of woe, and you know, you've had a different one the time before and the time before that and the time before that. And when you go away, you go, oh, I really feel sorry for that person. But if you ever sat down and analyse it, what's happened for 2 hours is she's just told you the postman was 10 minutes late. And he knew I was waiting for that thing. And I had to go out afterwards. How dare he? He's always on time. And just the day I bloody need him, he's late. What? Right? And so we have this thing that we think all these external things are out to get us, or I have a tough life because, you know, oh, you might have problems, but I have these amount of problems and I keep having problems. And nobody has any more problems than anybody else. You might get them in a rush that they all sort of seem to fit together in the same time period. But if you've constantly got problems that you're not resolving, that's just because you're not dealing with it well. Nothing more than that. Right? Everybody has an equal amount of problems. I've got problems in my life, but I don't call them problems, I call them challenges. And I'll tell you the difference. If you go to bed at night and you're worried about something and you're trying to work out and you say to yourself, oh, I've got a problem, oh God, that problem, something at work or something, you go, oh, that problem, I've got to overcome, that problem. If you manage to get to sleep, when you wake up in the morning, your wonderful unconscious will go, hey, don't forget you've got a problem. And then you start off with a terrible day as well as probably having a terrible evening. And you can change that. You can just call it a challenge. Right, I've got a challenge. Okay, right. I need to resolve this. And your unconscious might then spring the very thing in that you need to understand or that it needs to finish it off and work on it for you. Because it will work on it for you. And so it will go, well, what do you want? Right, and if you go, not London... It'll get you London, okay? Not problem. I just don't want the problem. Okay, well, that's not helpful. What do you want? Well, I want to be happy. Okay, yeah, I've got something to work on now. I'll try and make you happy. But whatever you ask your unconscious mind for, it will get you. It will find some way of getting, if it's at all possible. Because, you see, we can do almost anything. Anything is possible. If I was to say, right, well, I'd like to be able to fly, right? That is possible, isn't it? I can go in a plane, I can do anything. But if I said, I'd like to fly off that balcony. I'd like to be able to just flap my arms and fly. Well, what I'm doing then is I'm putting a restriction on it. I'm saying I'd like to fly, but I'd like to fly this way that's impossible. Right? And that's what we do all the time is we go, I'd like this, but I'd like to do it in a way that nobody's ever done it before. Right? Might happen. It's highly unlikely. But since I've had an open mind to things, my life's changed. I have what I call happy coincidences. I just have so many things happen to me that a billion to one chances. But they happen every day. And I'm sort of getting used to them now, but I still see things as miraculous. I'm lucky enough to have that childlike quality that I've never grown up. And in fact, I'm regressing now. I'm going back in time. I'm 63, but I think I'm about 40, but I act about 11. I've just got that thing of, oh, lovely, how does that work? Oh, I know how that works. The lady here has got pain. I've offered to turn it off. And she looked sort of like, you can't do that. Well, I can. I can. It's not a gift. I've just learned how to do it. I've learned how the mind works and how it translates pain and how it gives you a message for pain. And if it's old pain and it's no longer needed, you know, if there's nothing you can do about it, if your doctor gives you painkillers, he's actually saying it's okay to turn the pain off. So why isn't it okay for your brain to go, I'll stop sending you that pain message then? And as soon as I pose that to it, it goes, sounds like a good idea, and it turns the pain off. And it's as simple as that. But it is miraculous. If you see it happening, it's miraculous. And if you have it happen to you, it feels miraculous. But I'm not allowed to advertise miracles. I know how it works, and it still seems like a miracle to me when I do it. And I nearly cry when they do. It's just so wonderful. But we're capable of this. You see, the way the unconscious mind works, it runs programs. And you're either born with a program, right? So this is why you came out and you knew to breathe and eat and poo and all those sort of things. And then we learn things. And then we turn them into programs by repetition. So when we learnt to walk, we got up a few times and fell over. Luckily, we have these things called nappies that protect your bum. Great. Great timing, isn't it, to have a nappy when you keep falling over? And we keep doing this, and at no point in the history of the world has any mother ever said, will you stop that walking stuff? It's just not for you. You keep falling over. You're never going to be able to walk. Stop it. Nobody ever does that. We just keep doing it until we can do it. And then when we can walk, we're a bit unsteady on our feet. And then if we go on cobbles and that, we fall over. And then we learn how to walk on cobbles. And then we learn how to walk up mountains and various other things. And then if we get a limp, we learn how to adjust the fact that we now have a limp. And it carries on like that. So there's some programs we're born with. There's some we learn. There's some we add to all the time. So like your language skills get better as you get older. You get a bigger vocabulary. You might even learn a foreign language, and that helps you with your English. Because you start noticing things about that then that are similar to English, and then you have a better understanding of things. So some things we change. Some things we don't change. Some things we learn in an instant, literally like that. Okay? And these things are things like anxiety and depression. It's my belief they come to you in an instant. Right? There might be a tendency in the family and you might be born with some hereditary thing. But if you're born to two people who raise you who are depressives, it's quite likely you'll be depressive because of the way they raised you rather than the fact it's in your blood or genes or whatever. Right? Your genes do not have to do any particular thing. It just gives you a disposition towards something. Your genes are a blueprint that you have. If you accept that they only make what's on that blueprint, you'll have all the things that you think you should get hereditarily. If you turn that belief the other way around and you say, I can believe different to that, I don't necessarily have to get any of those things. Right? Your genes form in a better place. Right? They're not under stress, they're not constantly under attack. And the gene, because we lose cells every day, we lose something like 100 million or 100 billion, I can never remember which it is, it might be 100 trillion. But the new cell that forms, it starts splitting off the old one, and it will replicate itself, but it will then ask all the cells around it, what am I? Oh, and then they'll go, oh, well, you're part of a shoulder. And then you go, oh, is it good here? And they'll go, well, a lot of tension. You're going to be under a lot of tension. And it will change that cell to be under constant tension, because that's what's needed there. Right? If somewhere else, it'll do whatever it needs to be in that bit. So we learn these things in one go. So here's my take on anxiety. Something happens to you and it's quite traumatic, and it's usually as a child. Something happens as an adult, you can rationalise it and say, you know, I got mugged, but it was late at night, I was in the car park, people were coming out of the pubs all drunk and so on. You can do that. Still not nice. But as a child, something happens and you go, oh my God, what's happening? And you have no idea what's happening. It might be the first time you've been in so much fear that you couldn't move, and there's chemicals coursing around your body and you just don't understand any of it. And in that split second, your unconscious goes, we don't want to feel like this ever again. And it goes, well, make a program then. How do I stop this person feeling like this again? And it goes, right, hypervigilance. You call it anxiety. And it goes, right, just remember what happened just before the problem that sent me like this, and record all that. And when you see those things, let me know, and we'll try and get away next time. Okay? And so the brain locks in everything that was around you when this happens, and then for the rest of your life you go around with this hypervigilance of, I'm sure something bad's going to happen. You just have that feeling inside. You might not be looking, you know, this is the exaggerated bit, but this is what you're doing on the inside. You're forever looking around for this problem that's about to hit you, so you can avoid it. And so it feels very real to you. If you've got anxiety, it's a very real feeling, because it's now sending chemicals around your body for you to fight or flight. Always. 24 hours a bloody day. No wonder you get ill, because your immune system gets overloaded with all the wrong chemicals. And the problem is that if we set off through life with a very poor opinion of ourselves, we then only look for that poor opinion. Because we get a belief system, and that belief is very rigid then, and we go, well, I can prove it. This person's not treating me very nice. Oh, that proves it. Oh, this person, oh, that proves it. But we're only looking for the horrible things that they say to us. And somebody says something nice, and we push them away, and we go, oh, can't cope with that. Right? Can't cope with nice stuff. Why would you like me? I don't like me. That's what you're actually saying. And then we take on what we think other people are saying, and we twist it round to something bad, and then we go, oh, they don't like me either because they said this. Well, they didn't say that. And they certainly didn't mean that. People just come out with random stuff. They don't particularly think about it. And if you think about somebody saying something nasty to you, what does that make them? Right? Nice people don't say nasty stuff. Right? And nasty people don't say nice stuff, unless there's a dig in there somewhere, okay? So, if you're anxious, you learnt that early on. But you took it on in one go, and it only takes something that was there at the time, and there's something similar now, and you go, oh, and you're in that anxious state, ready to fight or flight. Depression is slightly different. If somebody comes to me with anxiety, I've never failed yet to remove their anxiety. If somebody comes with depression, it's the same thing. It appears like the same thing. I can't tell the difference between anxiety and depression. Only the fact that it doesn't bloody go away. When I treat with somebody with anxiety, they'll have a week where they go, oh, I think my anxiety's coming back. And I go, well, you would think that, wouldn't you? You were anxious. And then it goes. It does. I've never had anybody yet after a week who's still anxious. But depression, you take the depression away. And if I explain what depression is, similar thing happens, small child, this thing happens, and it goes, oh, I've got to run or fight or something, and then it goes, no, play dead. Play dead, right? So you've got fright, flight, or freeze. Wish I didn't say that, because I always get it wrong. Fright, fight, now I'm going to stop. You know what I'm talking about. So you go into freeze, but you see, freeze is a different part of the brain. So when you go to freeze, you're actually going to the primitive part of your brain, and it goes, ah, right. We don't want to be social anymore because it's a reptilian part of your brain and it goes to the reptile bit. And reptiles don't hang out together on rocks. They just go there and sunbathe, don't they? And so you become that you don't want anybody around you. And I describe depression, and if anybody's got it, I hope you understand from this description. And if you don't understand this description, please come and talk to me, because I want to learn as much as I can about depression. It's like having a black duffel bag. You stand on it, you pull it up, it's dark on the inside, and on the outside it's invisible. It makes you invisible. And while you're in it, you turn off all your feelings. Because although it's invisible, somebody might tread on you, might they? Okay, so they can't see you and you're hidden from everybody, but you're in the darkness. Your unconscious mind thinks that's a wonderful place for you, right? No feelings, darkness, nobody can get at you because you've turned everything off, right? It's not, is it? It's a horrible place. But it thinks it's lovely and it's better than the conflict that you would face, because your unconscious mind can only do things better than what it thinks the result might be, right? If it doesn't do it, that's just wind. Just wind, honest. All these mediums downstairs. Anyway, so that's depression. So if you take depression off somebody and the conflict arises and they go, oh, I don't know what to do, don't know what to do, they look for the duffel bag to hide in. And when it's not there, they reinvent it. They bring it back again. So every time I've took depression off somebody, they go and find it again and keep nipping back in there. And we also have this thing that we beat ourselves up over stuff. Anybody here beat themselves up over stuff? Yeah, most of you. Do you want to know why? Hey? Do you want to know why? Okay. If something hurts us in the past, there's a lesson to be learned from it, right? There's something that we need to finish off, because everything in life is these learning loops. So you're born with all these learning loops. Then you learn stuff bit by bit. Then you learn things in an instant as well. And so you have these learning loops. Now, when something keeps nipping you back into the past, what it's actually saying is, we haven't finished with this yet, because I don't know what I'm supposed to learn from that. So you keep nipping back in the past. Let's talk about relationships, because they're the most common one. So you have a relationship that ends. And if you finished it, you're more likely to move on from it because you know all the reason why you finished it. You know, oh, it wasn't that nice and I wasn't getting a lot out of it and I moved on. But if you actually go back to it and they finished with you, you go, well, was there another woman? Was it this? Was it that? Was it the other? And you go through, but you don't actually come to a conclusion. Because now it's a distance away, so you're not a detective. You can't go back and follow up all the leads. Right, you just have the same evidence that you had before that you couldn't make a decision on. And yet you keep nipping back to it, trying to do the Jack the Ripper murder. You're trying to find out who Jack the Ripper was. Well, it was 200 years ago or whatever. You know, you're not going to find out. You can speculate, but you can't find out. And so if you keep going back to something, it's because you're trying to learn from it. So I'm going to make a good suggestion now then. If you keep going back to something, next time it pops into your head, say, I'll go there one more time and I will make a decision as to what I need to learn from it, if anything. Right? And you might just come to the conclusion that the other person was an arsehole. And that's your learning completed. And the learning is, don't go out with another arsehole. And it can be as simple as that. But if you keep going back there and rubbing your nose in it, you'll sort of like, you'll never recover from it. Right? And so why we keep hurting ourselves with things is because we want to learn the lesson and we don't want to hurt like that again. So I'm going to give you an example. That if next to my front, this is fictitious by the way, next to my front door is this massive spike. And it's on a building I don't own, so I can't do anything about it. And I go out the door one day, and I tear my arm quite badly on it. Really hurts. Could have lost the use of my arm. Very traumatic. Oh, God, you know. I mustn't forget that that spike's outside, right? Just see what I've done. Mustn't forget. That means forget, right? So I now keep going out, but every time I go back out, I now go like this. And then I get, if it heals up quickly, I think, oh, it's healed up quickly, I might do it again. I might not have learnt my lesson, because although it hurt a lot at the time, it's fading now, and it doesn't feel like it hurts anymore, so I might go out and actually do it again, and that would really hurt. So I tell you what I'll do. I'll pick the scab off every day and not let it get better. And then every day will be the fresh thing that it really hurts, because I'll remind myself, and then I won't stick myself on it. And that's what we do. And it sounds stupid, and it is. But that's what we do. We deliberately hurt ourselves by going back to something, refreshing it in our mind, going, oh, that really hurts, that really hurts, that really hurts. If you went to Skegness and you didn't like it, don't go there again. If you tell me you're going to Skegness, I don't like Skegness, where are you going? Skegness. Stop going there. Right? And it is as simple as that. And you can say, but it keeps popping up in my mind. Well, finish the loop off. Decide what you've got to learn from it, and it finishes the loop. Because it can rest easy then, because it knows all the rules. Right? And that's all you need to do. So we take things, I better look at the time. Oh yeah, right. So we take things and we start to give them significance. Now, we don't tend to do it for good stuff. Isn't that barking mad? We don't take good stuff and look forward to it. There's only like holidays or weddings or things like that that we actually look forward to. We have no view of the future apart from this worry that we've got. Well, we nip into the future and we go, oh, that thing next Thursday, that's going to be horrible. Right? Oh, that's rude. Oh, it's not going to go well at all. And then what you're doing is, all the chemicals that you would make when you find out that terrible news on the Thursday, you're now making now as though it's true. Right? You've just beaten yourself up in advance of something that might not happen. Right? There has never, ever been anybody on the planet who gets really bad news. The doctor goes, oh, you've got a week to live. And you go, oh, whoopee. I've been preparing this for the last 2 years that I knew that you would say that. And I'm so delighted now that I've worried for 2 years because that's really good. You don't do that. It still hurts. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what that news is. So I want you to all indicate if you're a worrier or not. Are you a worrier? The warrior, most of you. Okay, I try this on a regular basis, so let's see if it works with you. I want you to think of three things in the past that you've worried about that actually happened. Right, try and get three. Anybody got three? Put your hand up. Anybody got two? Anybody got one? No. You've worried all your damn life and nothing's ever happened. You've done all this chemical stuff that rushes through your body and you never actually got there to use it. Because what happens is we go, all this terrible thing next Thursday, and as you get towards Thursday, it's sort of like, oh no, it's not going to happen now. And then we go, oh, what else are going to worry about? And then you worry about something else the week after. So you're in a constant state of worry for things that never happen. Because we're always picking the worst possible scenario, and we're going there and we go, oh, this is it, this is... We don't pick the second worst scenario. We don't pick the thing that might happen that's good, that we want to happen. We pick the thing that's the worst. This should all be sinking in. Your life should change before you now. Okay. I've got to give you one final bit. And I intended to do this at the start, but... This is what you get when it flows, you see. It just goes where it wants to go. I want you to think about the value you put on yourself, your self-worth. Right? This is not what anybody else thinks about you. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks about you. I want you to think of your value of self-worth out of a scale of 10. 10 being you have high self-worth, and 0 being you have no self-worth. Okay? You don't have to tell anybody else, but I want you to think of that number now. And the first one that sprang into your head is the right one. Okay? Whatever that number was. So, I'm going to give you a quick way now. I'm going to change all your lives in the next 2 minutes. Okay? Now, how do we get self-worth? We get self-worth when we're younger by looking around at everybody and going, oh, look, I can do this. And sometimes people will go, oh, lovely, oh, show it to Uncle Fred. Oh, isn't that brilliant? And other times people will just damn ignore us. or they'll hit us, or they'll do something, and we go, I'm of no value. And once you make that decision, you will look for things that prove that to you. You'll never look for changing that value. So your low level of self-worth came from back here, right? From other people. But now, this is your score of you. And if anybody here has got like a 2 or a 3, a 2 means you're running your life at 20% of what it could be. And that's you doing that. A 3 is 30%, 4 is 40%, and so on. You're restricting your life just by not giving yourself a bigger number. Right? So I want you now to think of a bigger number than that that you can cope with. Okay? And increase it by as many points as you like. Even give yourself a 10. And I want you to do that now. Okay? And just feel the difference as you go up those few points. Just see the changes it makes in you. And just understand this is your value of you. And at any time in the future, you can make this a 10 if you've not already got there. You can change in an instant just by changing your mind about what score you give yourself. Otherwise, you're letting a 5-year-old run you. The 5-year-old you that somebody hurt, you're carrying that forward. Why should you live now with a 5 program you made when you were 5? Just take your 5 off your age. See how long you've had that program and what good it did you. Right? And if you can, give yourself a 10. A 10 now, in this second. Or try one on. Try a 10 on. And if you've gone up a few points, but you've not gone up to 10, I don't want you to think about why you can't give yourself the other 2 or 3 or whatever. I want your unconscious mind, when you leave here, to keep working on getting you towards that 10. You see, when we're younger, we have things bashed out of us. Oh, don't show off, don't be a big head, don't, you know, you'll never get your head through the door. You can tell these are things that really hurt me. And I had an exceptionally sized domed back of the head. So when somebody said, don't be a big head, I was like, how the hell can I not be? I've got one. So it particularly stuck there. But this is what's happening. We get told not to blow our own trumpet, not to show off, not to do things. And I help people with marketing as well who run businesses like this. And the biggest thing is people are frightened to go out and sell themselves. Because they'll say, oh, I do Reiki. Reiki's really good. It does this, this. And they're quite happy to show off what Reiki does. But they don't go, I'm Mary and I do Reiki and I'm brilliant at it. Because that's showing off. But if you tell everybody how great Reiki is, but you don't say, and I'm Mary and I do Reiki, they go somewhere else. And they go, oh, somebody £5 cheaper up the road. It's just Reiki. Reiki's good. Right? We have to take this thing on for ourselves. And if you come to future talks, in fact, if you give me your email address on one of these forms at the front, the prize draw things, I will also send you to 3 videos I've just made. One is called 100% You. One is what we've just done, which is the self-worth. And another one's called What Everybody Else Thinks About You Is None of Your Damn Business. And I think you'll find all 3 helpful together because it's all about self-worth. Everything I deal with is self-worth. As soon as somebody walks through that door, I could save 10 minutes in every consultation by saying, is it your self-worth? And they would crash down in the doorway and go, yeah. Because it's always about self-worth. And you've got the chance now. Now you're one of the few people in the world who know how to do this, right? So take that number. Is anybody still on the same number they started with? No. Right. Anybody gone up 4 or 5 points? Oh, yeah. Okay. Anybody gone up to a 10? Brilliant. Okay. Were you a 10 before? No. How many points have you gone up? 3. You, sir?
Yeah, 1.
1? And you?
4.
How many points did you go up?
4.
1. Good. Okay, well, you haven't got far to go if you're on a 9. If you can go from a 9 to a 10, that's not much of a journey, is it, compared with going from 2 to 10? Right? So if you've only gone up a couple of points, but you were down on the low scales, you've done really well today. Right? If you've gone from a 2 to a 4, you've doubled how good your life is. And you chose that today. And it is as simple as that. Everybody says when I do things with them, it can't be as simple as that. And I'm going to turn the pain off of this lady, so she can go around and tell you all. You can all bump into her and go, hey, how are you doing? No pressure. Okay, so please fill in the forms. If you want to come and see me afterwards, I've got a stand, and it's down the far end of the building there, in the corner next to the relaxation tent. And if you want to chat to me about anything, please feel free to do so. Phone calls are free. You can have 10 minutes on the phone with me, and I'll sort of tell you how I can help or what to do or whatever. Okay, and please take brochures and cards and pass them to your friends. If you run a club or anything, invite me, come and give a talk. They are free of charge. And it's just, I like to get the word out. I like people to have better lives, and it's so simple to do. There's not that restrictions there. If you're fighting something, if you're holding on to something and you won't let it go, even though it's damaging you, that's because you think it's saving you from something. Your unconscious mind thinks it's saving you from something. And I do a thing called brain bargaining. I talk to the unconscious and I go, look, it was probably a good thing when you invented it, but it's no good now. It's not helping this person's life. In fact, it's making it a misery. Will you turn it off? And it goes, yes. And it is as simple as that, because your unconscious mind is to get you whatever you want. So don't ask for London if you don't want London. Okay? Don't ask for anxiety. Okay, I've been Stephen Blake. You've been a wonderful audience. Thank you very much. Yeah. Come and see me down later. Okay. Hey, come. Yeah. Hey, are you coming down now?
No, I've got an appointment at 1.
Okay. Just come and see me when I'm not busy, and I'll turn it off. And it takes about 10 minutes. Yeah, it's permanent as well. You're prepared for permanent. If you don't want it turned off, if it's going to cause you any bother to turn it off, don't come and see me. Thank you. No, it does. It just goes. If it won't go for any reason, it will turn it down. Right. It's very rare when somebody comes to see me that it won't turn off. It's usually people who like to moan about pain all the time and say, I never moan about pain. They're the people I can't work on. Thanks.